Namaste, and welcome back to our seven-day series in Rishikesh, India. Today's practice was an interesting practice, and I hope that it invoked some interest, and I hope that maybe it wasn't too much. I think sometimes those kinds of practices can be a bit overwhelming. And so today, we wanted to take a little bit of time to just speak about why this kind of practice.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of the time in yoga studios and in like the everyday kind of 60-minute asana practices, this kind of stuff is a little bit left out.
Mm.
And it's kind of like the more traditional style practices that include these parts of the practice, these kriyas that are such an integral part of Hatha Yoga. Why do you think that it's been left out?
It's just a little weird.
It's just a little weird, yeah. It is a little weird. But I've always been a bit of a, like, I think I like weird and obscure things.
Yeah.
I've kind of always been like that.
Yeah.
And so when I learned this kind of practice, and for me it was like 3 years into my journey before I uncovered this kind of world of kriya, it was really interesting to me, and I noticed very quickly that I felt a lot clearer after doing kriya
practices.
They're
very potent practices as well, and I think that would have something to contribute to not being so mainstream, or so widely found. That they have a lot of potency, and it's not kind of one of those things where you have to do it for a long time to feel the effects. You kind of can feel the effects almost immediately depending on the practice.
True.
And maybe that scares people a little bit.
Yeah, people are afraid of their own power. Cool. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So we'd love to know how you went with the practice. And as I briefly mentioned, this part of Hatha Yoga is really the cleansing part of Hatha Yoga. There's a big emphasis on cleansing and purification. We could think of it as saucha to an extent, like creating that cleanliness, that inner cleanliness, and I guess you could say purity in your life. I always liked this analogy of your body is like a white cloth. And similarly to a white cloth or like your white bed sheets, as you go through life, that white cloth gets dirty. Say you like wore a white scarf and then you sweat on it a little bit, it gets a little bit brown. And then you drop it and it gets a bit dirty from the puddle that you dropped it in. And then you eat some beetroot curry and it gets a big red stain on it. And so on and so forth. And so this, what was once a pure and clean and beautiful white scarf, it gets a little bit dirty. And so what do?
Wash it.
You throw it in the wash. And so these kinds of practices, you give it to your mom and get her special ultra whitening substance onto it. She said it's natural. And so our bodies can be treated in much the same way, is that at a certain point, there's a level of toxins that builds up that becomes too much for our body to process. And our body can process a lot on its own, and that we have organs specifically catered to removing toxins. That's what your liver does. And then at a certain point, we need a little bit of help. And I think our lifestyles in the modern age are becoming more and more and more increasingly filled with toxins. And I think this is an interesting conversation, because toxins aren't always... they're not always, what's the word I'm looking for, synthetic.
They're like chemicals.
Yeah, they're not always synthetic chemicals. They're not always plastics. Like, toxins are found in nature. All plants have, I think they're called phytochemicals, and they are toxins that are naturally produced by all vegetables, plants, fruits. Everything in nature has a certain amount of toxicity in it. And that toxicity naturally is used as kind of like a way for our body to build resilience, right? It's this naturally occurring chemical that will break that body down just a little bit. Mm. You know, in Ayurveda, what do they say? It's like it asks your body to give something to it.
Yeah.
Your body has to give something up in order to digest that food.
And commonly it's energy.
Yeah.
What we mean by that is,
And so there's these toxins all around us that will just degrade your body a little bit. And I mean, that's what we're doing when we exercise. We're creating a little bit of damage to our body so that our body can become stronger.
Yeah.
And so so many people are kind of like, toxins are the worst, chemicals are bad. Toxins are not inherently bad. It's too many toxins that are bad. And our body can process a certain amount of toxins. But at a certain point, that toxic load becomes too high.
Mm.
And so we need to start to put in practices to purify, to cleanse, and to detoxify. And there are many, many different practices and techniques that we can use to do that. This is one of them.
Mm.
The reason why pranayama and this kind of kriya yoga is very, very effective in removing toxins from the body is that 70% of the toxins, I'm sure it's more nuanced than this, but from what I understand, 70% of the toxins that are released from our body are released through our breath. Mm. The kind of process works, you breathe in oxygen, it gets taken through iron into your bloodstream, the blood moves into the muscles and the organs, and they take the nutrients that they need, and then the toxins are removed and taken back out through the blood and back into the lungs and then perspirated outwards.
Mm.
So there's this cycle that's happening in our body all day, all night, where, you know, drawing in nourishment and releasing toxin.
Mm.
Same when we go to the toilet, same when we sweat. All of these things are releasing from the body what is no longer needed, what's no longer nurturing and nourishing for the body.
Mm.
And so these kind of practices, the forceful breathing, allows us to empty our lungs and then fill up with clean, pure breath.
Mm.
So long as the conditions in your city will allow for that.
Mm.
And that's why it's always recommended that, like, we're doing our pranayama practice in a ventilated room, if not outdoors, in a non-polluted city area.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the room that we're sitting in is full of fresh, clean air.
Mm.
So that's number one. Maybe we should talk about tongue scraping.
Cool.
You can take this one.
All right. Well, as Aaron mentioned, the mouth and that area of our body is where we excrete a lot of toxins and where they come to rest. And specifically throughout the night when we sleep, and so often we sleep with our mouths closed. And throughout the night, as we begin to allow the toxins to come up through the breath into the mouth, they kind of get trapped there on the tongue. And if you have been tongue scraping or you are currently tongue scraping, then you know it all too well. And if you haven't, I urge you to give it a shot, and you'll never go back, I'm sure of it.
But basically, I don't think there's been ever anyone that we've introduced a tongue scraper to that has gone back.
No.
I think everyone that I've spoken to ever that started tongue scraping has been like, this is life changing, and I could not go a morning without scraping my tongue.
It's pretty intense. And so basically what they say is that obviously you, all these toxins enter your mouth while you sleep, and when you arise, it really should be the first thing that you do, and it should motivate you to get out of bed really quickly to do it. And they say that it's like a maximum of 7 times you should swallow, before you scrape your tongue. And that's like maximum, because you can imagine all the toxins that you're excreting throughout the night, residing in your mouth, and then you're just swallowing them back. back down into your body when it's obviously something that your body is trying to release naturally. So
you think about the furry feeling on your teeth. Mm. It's that times 10 on your tongue.
Mm.
But you can't really feel it on your tongue because it's the tongue that you use for the feeling.
For sure. And, you know, when we basically just get like a tongue scraper, most of them are copper. We have them in the studio or in our shop. If you'd like to buy one, just let us know. But you basically swipe your tongue scraper from back to front around 7 times each and give it a big rinse and wash it all out. And then you brush your teeth and you go on with the rest of your routine. But it's very interesting because the toxins that are released, you can often tell like the characteristics of what's going on in your body just by observing what comes off your tongue. And if it's quite thick and sticky and white, it just really speaks to, you know, toxins in general, and which is the word for toxins in Ayurveda, being released and being expelled. And there's different colors can relate to different things. So more of like a white towards the front of the tongue is quite kapha related. Yellow or greenish towards the middle of the tongue is quite pitta related. And then towards the back, like a grayer or blackish kind of color relates to vata.
Oh, if you've got black coming off of your tongue.
It's just like a color type. You would be worried if you had black.
If you have black coming off of your tongue, go and see your doctor, please. For the love of God.
It's more like gray.
I know. But seriously. Cool. So what else, like how, what forms do toxins come in? Like if we're talking what could cause
Oh, everything. But mainly is a byproduct of digestive issues. Normally all disease comes from digestion issues at its root, which is always a very interesting thing to learn. Mm. I think that that's something that's not really shared too much in Western science or Western med. But yeah, it mostly resides from undigested food, and you know that can come from a myriad of things like overeating, eating too much, eating foods that don't, you know, work with your body, poor food combinations, for example, eating like heavy foods like bread with light foods like fruit, like mixing those two together causes indigestion.
Yeah.
So many other things as well.
And so the idea being that or toxins or anything that is stored in your body that the body cannot use.
Mm.
And so if you eat something that is then left in your body undigested, your body doesn't know what to do with it, it's a toxin. Yeah,
and basically like what I was learning recently is like the body can't differentiate too much between what is nourishment and what is not. And so the way that it works in Ayurveda is once you've eaten some food, it goes into the tissues of the body, basically. And it was, yeah, basically like bringing up that even if there is some or sticky residue of toxins that is the residue of digested food or undigested food, for example, it still gets distributed into the tissues because it doesn't understand that that's not nourishment for the body. And then once it starts to do that, it gets even harder to remove. And so often that's kind of what we're doing with these techniques, sure, but, you know, more hardcore cleanse types like Khichdi cleanses or stuff like that kind of leading up to Panchakarma. Panchakarma is a big cleansing action treatment, retreat style kind of thing. But basically when we start to move toxins in the body, that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to find all these toxins that have made their way into our bodily tissues, which are not so easy to access, and bring them back to the digestive tract. And by doing that, we start to bring them back into a space where we are able to eliminate them effectively and optimally with, you know, obviously some support.
Mm. And it's so interesting, like the kriyas in Hatha Yoga are very much one, focused on the respiratory system, like cleansing through the breath, and then two, with the bandha, which we started to touch on in the practice, like Uddiyana bandha is specifically designed to pressurize and like, yeah, create that contraction of the organs as if to kind of wring them out.
Totally.
We've got some construction going on today. These construction workers are giving us a whole lot of trouble. Anyway, and so we're not only working with the breath, but we're also stimulating the digestive system as well through the kriyas.
And I think that you know, it's such a common thing that I, you know, offer Ayurvedic treatments quite commonly, and they are quite detoxifying and stuff like that. But even this practices like these Kriya techniques, but even more so just like yoga in general, meditation in general, it can bring up a lot, and it can start to move some things. And I think that that's a not a misconception, but we commonly have people come back to us that are like, oh, I didn't feel so good.
Or the next day I woke up with a headache, or the next day I woke up with some pain, or the next day I felt really sluggish. And it's like, well, that's because it's got things moving. It's got toxins out of where they've been residing for so long. And so it's going to take your body a couple of days to process that. And so you give it a few days and then you come again.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's just such an interesting point, because, you know, I'm so particular about who I take on for my treatments because of this exact reason, that I don't want somebody to turn around and be like, oh, I felt like shit after that. When really, like, these are the preparatory experiences for, you know, big, deep detoxes and cleanses.
And you can think about, like, especially with what Paige offers the treatments, which is Abhyanga, the massage, it's often very much people are kind of like, oh, it was very, like, soft. There wasn't a lot of pressure used. And it's not a lot of pressure used because you're working with the lymph.
Yeah,
it's very working with the, what is the lymph? It's like, it's like fluids in the body. Tell me more. What's the fluid that moves through the lymphs? It's a system that removes toxins from the body.
Yeah, totally. The lymph is, it's called rasa in Sanskrit, which is the blood plasma, the plasma, which you might be familiar with like some kind of blood donations. You can donate plasma similarly. Basically, it's your lymph system, and it's the first tissue of the body. And it's so important in Ayurveda because the first tissue of the body then feeds all the other tissues. We can go on and on, like blood, muscle, fat, et cetera, et cetera. So it's so important that the rasa, the plasma, is well fed and well functioning.
And so it's feeding all of your joints.
Yeah.
All of your muscles, all of your blood. Or this plasma feeds everything. And so that doesn't have its own pump is the idea. It doesn't have a heart like the blood system has that pumps the blood around the body. And so it needs this manual stimulation in order to get the plasma, the lymph, moving. And so often people will come with a cancer or something in a place where there's lymph nodes.
Yeah.
Breasts, armpits, thighs, all of these places, because the lymph hasn't been moving. And so in Ayurveda, it's very important that you're moving the lymph through this very gentle massage.
And the idea is that we're always trying to move it towards the heart so that it gets back to the heart and it circulates more and more. It is a super important part, because you can imagine if the rasa is the first tissue to get fed from our digested or our undigested food, then it could become very easily for toxins to get stuck in those places, like the lymph nodes, as you mentioned, which cause all sorts of diseases. That's why it's so important. Like Abhyanga is like the Ayurvedic practice of getting your lymph moving, and specifically very nourishing for all doshas, but more so Vata. And then we have the dry body brushing, which has kind of become the like craze at the moment, and everybody's doing it. And I tried it a couple of times, and it was definitely not for me.
Because I love it.
It's a very like kapha reducing practice. It's like a bit more rough than the Abhyanga. It does the same thing. But Abhyanga is this soft, smooth, oily massage, and the dry body brushing is just this rough, like exfoliating feeling of like, getting it all moving, which is great for kapha dosha. But not so nourishing for Vata dosha. But it's just interesting because these practices are so prevalent in our society, even without so much Eastern knowledge. You know, like we all love going to get massages, and all of us. But, you know, I've been brought up like that when I was really young. I was always going to get massages, and even these dry body brushes and loofahs, you know, like loofahs in the shower. It's all there, and it's all important.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then in Hatha yoga, alongside these Kriya techniques, we have what's called Shatkarma. And we have some cleansing techniques. Really common one is neti pot, which we both do very, very commonly. Putting some water up one nostril, it goes through the sinuses, comes out the other nostril, cleansing the nostrils, the nasal passage for pranayama practice.
Yeah.
And then we have some more extreme ones like
I don't know the
Dal Tea. like swallowing a very mildly salty cloth until it gets into your stomach and then pulling it back out again. There's one where you chug 6 liters of salty water and then vomit it back out. All sorts of stuff like this is kind of built into tradition. It's not something that we're trained to offer, and it's not something that either of us have ever done. I'm sure if you went out into the mountains in India, or if you found a really, really good Ayurvedic doctor in wherever you live, you might be able to find some cleansing technique like that, if it's necessary, and it's not always necessary. A lot of the people that we see are healthy, and they're not carrying a huge toxic load to the point of disease. And so this kind of simple practices, just integrating into your day, can be enough to create enough of a detoxification that it can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, I think that's such an important part to notice as well, is like we're kind of extremists in this modern world. And we always want to find the like most extreme way to do something. And it's often mentioned in Ayurveda that, yeah, there's so many alternatives that we choose to do first before taking a panchakarma. There's so many things that we need to have settled and grounded and stabilized in our body and our agni, our digestive system, and stuff like that, that, you know, we really need to ground and feel supported in our own experience before we can move on to such techniques like that, because they're intense. And if you have a high toxic load.
I remember, just like personal story, Paige and I, when we first met, I was kind of into fasting at the time, and I was like, oh, Paige, let's do a juice fast together. And our plan was to do 3 days of this juice fast. So we went and bought all of the stuff, all of the carrots and the apples and the celeries, and piled it all up on the bench. It's nice. And we're going to start this juice fast. And so we started, we had our first juice, was like a celery juice. And I remember it was like our first time having celery juice. And I was able to just kind of like scull it down. And Paigey, it took her so long. She was just like, bleh, bleh. And I was like, oh, okay, Paigey hasn't done much fasting before. Never had she done any fasting.
Healthy, you know?
No, like Paigey was kind of like a hot chip vegan.
Yeah.
And so we got about 12 hours into this fast, and Paigey and I decided, oh, we'll go to the sauna and start to speed up the process.
Oh, my God.
And Paigey was just like, oh, I've got this migraine, and I can't think straight, and everything's foggy. And she didn't even make it 24 hours into the fast because she felt so terrible.
Yeah.
And it was just like that fasting process had brought up to the surface so much things that were underlying.
Yeah, totally.
Now, fast forward 3 years, she's put in place all of these simple techniques daily to reduce her toxic load so that she can start to bring to the surface and eliminate the toxins that were sitting deeper in the body.
Yeah, totally.
Now we can do 3-4 days fast, of Khichdi. But it's a similar thing.
Yeah.
And so there needs to be that little bit of groundwork that takes place before you kind of go extreme with the with a detox. So this is not medical advice. We are not experts in fasting or detoxification, but we can offer our experience, and we can offer what's within our scope of Ayurveda and within Hatha Yoga as well.
And recommendations if you want to go further.
Yeah. And then I think just the final piece of this conversation that we wanted to add was that sometimes toxins are not within what you would think as toxins, but we could think of lifestyle toxins. Anything that is in your life that is no longer nourishing and fulfilling for you, you could consider a toxin or toxic. You could have toxic people in your life, toxic relationships, toxic friends, people that don't want the best for you, people that are fueling negative behaviors within you, you know, peer pressuring you to drink or go out way past your bedtime. You could have a toxic job, you know, a toxic workplace.
And I think the more, we were kind of talking about this before, the more you start to align yourself with these practices of yoga, of Ayurveda, of sustainability, whatever it is that you're kind of following, the more you start to align yourselves with this, the purification starts to happen without even knowing it or understanding it.
And I think we've spoken about this on the podcast before, of just like the spiritual journey and the things that you have to let go of. But it really is that, and a lot of the time it can be a very uncomfortable process to realize that, oh, this is actually not serving me anymore. And if I stay here, if I continue down this path, in the long run, it's going to make me unhealthy.
Yeah,
you know, totally. Maybe I need to move out of this house. Maybe I need to move out of this place. Maybe I need to leave this job or leave this relationship or cut ties with this friend. And it really is that process in the whole of your life. Identifying what's toxic, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, habits, spending too much time on your phone or what you're eating, whatever it is. Bringing that to your conscious awareness and then consciously removing it from your life and integrating something new and something nourishing to replace it. And through that way, we don't have to go to the extreme of cleansing. We can create that cleansing over a slow, long period of time. And to go back to my white scarf analogy, that white scarf needs to be soaked for at least a few hours in order to remove the stains. And so we can find that, you know, soaking bucket of purity throughout our entire lifestyles and allow the entirety of our being to soak in a nourishing and pure lifestyle.
Beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, then.
Well, thanks for joining us. You've made it almost to the end, day 6 of this awesome challenge following us through India. We have, yeah, really enjoyed it so far and hope you are doing so too.
And tomorrow we'll be doing yin. So it'll be a nice restorative and nurturing practice for you.
Yes, so please stay for the final day. We'd love to have you. And if you'd like to continue studying or practicing with us further, we've got our online yoga studio of 200 practices. We've also got so many opportunities to study with us.
There might be 200 hours of content on the online studio.
Both online studying with us and in person studying with us in Berwick, our studio home, Victoria, Australia, but also Rishikesh, India next year and beyond. So stay tuned, keep up to date with all of our offerings, and we'd love to see you soon.
Hare Om.